Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Hey, I'm Tyler.
And I'm in pain.
And I'm listening to
The Element Podcast.
You are too.
What's happening to all my painful people out there? I got a illness that's undiagnosed at the moment. I don't know what's going on.
The T-Pain?
I am. we're actually doing a live Q&A on YouTube. We have a bunch of pre-documented questions that y'all have submitted from Instagram and some other places. So we're going to go through some of that stuff and then maybe answer a few live on YouTube as well. Tyler's got that stuff, I think, ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, pretty quick here.
It seems like a few of our folks on YouTube are on here, ready to do a little talking or whatever. What's up, guys?
Yeah.
Hey.
Hello. Debbie Hawley. I wonder if that's actually a woman or if that's like a husband using a woman's
looks
avatar.
Like, just like
or
Debbie Hawley. That's how the song goes, right?
Uh-oh, and you'll marry Tyler Moore.
Okay, so we're going to answer some questions.
We're just looking at each other.
Sometimes we get distracted by the big deer in
okay,
here.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, what's some questions?
Casey, this is a perfect entrance for you,
is
man.
It? This stuff is going to range all over the place, so we're just going to rock and roll.
These come from everybody on Instagram, mostly in other places.
Man, y'all going to make me talk.
Thoughts
okay.
on well, elk management in Texas. Could there be, or he suggests that it could be much more hunting opportunity.
Well, guys, I'm just going to state facts, and then we'll get into opinions.
Facts, baby.
The fact is that in Texas, elk are treated as livestock. So elk are not a game animal in Texas. What that means is a lot of things. From the top down, they are not managed by Texas Parks and Wildlife. They are managed by the Department of Agriculture. And the Department of Agriculture really doesn't give a hoot about elk or other exotics. So it gets a little weird because they are game animals elsewhere, so you start transporting them, it gets kind of strange, but if you call them Barasinga or red deer, nobody really cares. They just think that's that because they don't know any difference. But so there's that aspect. Also, since they are managed as livestock, they are sold as livestock, and that means that they bring a big ticket. You may or may not know this, but there are many, many, many 400-inch elk in Texas. On free range, actually. Maybe not many on free range, but a bunch of them. And they bring a high, high dollar for that. You probably know a little bit more about that than I do because you have a pretty good buddy that does some guiding on that stuff, right?
He for free range stuff, yeah. Yeah, he does mostly free range guided hunts on this is private land, but free range. And I think they go for like, I don't know, the last few years they were going for like 10, I think, or a little or more. And I think they had shot a 400 within the last couple of years. But most of the bulls are in that 370 range, mm-hmm. I think.
What that also means is that you can whip out your rifle on September 5th whenever they're bugling like nuts and just go smoke one down.
That's what
and
they do, a lot of them.
If you can't get it done in the daytime, you can whip out your spotlight or your thermal unit and smoke one down that way as well. So
headshots, baby.
That's right. Those are the facts. There's probably more facts out there. Oh, another fact would be that elk in my – I shouldn't say in my opinion if I'm talking about facts – you can find said factual information to support the fact that elk have native range within Texas. That would be the Trans-Pecos region out there around Guadalupe Peak and all that stuff. You will be able to find fossil records that indicate that being the case. Now, it can be disputed, and people will say that native peoples transported bones and yada yada, this and that and the other. It also, you can find some maps that show that elk may have ventured down into North Texas along the Canadian River, because that comes out of Colorado and up in the Rockies stuff. Well, actually, you know, pre-Columbian America, which means like pre-Columbus arriving, actually probably even pre-Lewis and Clark, there were many, many elk across the Great Plains, and the Great Plains definitely extends down into Texas. So pretty much anywhere that you can historically find buffalo, there's a really good chance that what we know as Rocky Mountain elk, which actually are west of the Mississippi elk, would probably be a better way to denote them. Those were native anywhere buffalo went. So who knows? Down in Nacogdoches, Texas, there might have been an elk at some point in time, which is kind of wild to think of. Now, thoughts on the management?
The management, yes, sir.
What do you think about that, Tyler?
I don't know. I'm afraid to speak. You know so much about it.
I don't know. I just get fired up about it and did some research a lot at one point in time.
I don't know. I think that if there was hard evidence that they were a native endemic species at some point in Texas, that it would be good to manage them like other wildlife. But I know that the libertarian in you despises what the state can do at times.
That's right.
I'm a little bit that way too. You know, I think you say this a lot, but the ideal way of management is that people take individual responsibility to understand how we should manage them. But mm-hmm. that's not everybody reads the Bible, Casey.
Individuals are dumb, but you know what I know who's dumber? The state is dumber. So it's hard to really kind of figure out what to do in that case. I will say this. My kind of personal decree is like, don't touch other people's stuff and don't hurt people. How broad of a brush do you want to paint? Are you touching other people's stuff because the wildlife belonged to the people? Also, didn't the state come up with that idea that wildlife belonged to the people? So I don't really know where I stand on that.
If the wildlife belongs to the people, then how is it okay that we can trap them in a fence and call them ours and do what we want to with them?
If that's the case. It is not if that's the case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, is it actually all the wildlife? Or can somebody just grab a lizard and put it in their aquarium?
I don't know. It depends on how the state has deemed the value of that animal. Because you can go out and take a sunfish and put it in your aquarium. But you cannot, now I mean sunfish, like lowercase sunfish, because bass are in the sunfish family. Mm-hmm. But let me say
a bluegill.
You can go out and take a bluegill
in Texas.
And put it in your aquarium. You cannot go out and take a largemouth and put it in your aquarium.
Mm-hmm.
However, I may have done that at some point in time, and it was really fun.
Yeah.
But, so, like, who determined that that was the case? Who determined it was good to shoot a gar in the back with an arrow and let it suffer for an hour and a half while in the bottom of the boat? But if you do that with a largemouth, the same guy who did that might want to scale you like you would scale said largemouth, you know?
So, you know,
like,
this kind of brings me back to the old...
Are we talking about elk? Golly!
This brings me down to the whole turkey thing that we're dealing with a lot in the culture right now. It's like,
mm-hmm. That's true.
Everybody wants to have this opinion about how you should hunt turkey, and if you, you know, should you decoy them? Should you call them? Should you decoy them with a fan? Is it, you know... And are these different skill levels that you should be able to, you know, acquire as you hunt these things? Or, you know, are these just a bird that literally at times might let you pet it as a wild bird because it just doesn't know any better?
It's bird-brained.
Yeah.
Right.
So, it, you know, to me, these are things that should be a little more up to the individual. And I think the state sometimes does leave some, you know, obviously in Texas we can feed. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of Michigan dudes that have a problem with that.
Oh, yeah.
But
some Ohioans too.
It's just different cultures. It's different thoughts. It's different ways of valuing. But I can promise you that I killed a deer when I was 9 because of corn.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And you know what? I hadn't gained any deer hunting expertise or, you know, at that point, really.
Like,
I didn't earn the deer, you know, because I'm the best hunter in the world and I can go out and discern sign and all this stuff, you know what I mean?
So it's sort of gatekeeping, right? So, like, would you have the same vigor for hunting deer now if you were not allowed to shoot that deer when you were 9?
Who knows, man?
Yeah, there's no way to
I might have given up because I might have gotten cold and hungry not liked deer hunting too
much.
Imagine
if you were doing the same thing, but in Michigan where you can't, you know, like, bait, but you're way colder.
I mean,
you know?
If you're in Michigan, you just don't want to be there anyway. You know what I mean? So
exactly. okay, so back to the elk take. What do you think about elk management in Texas?
I was not ready for this question.
I can answer mine if you want to think.
Yes, please.
Okay. Yep. Because without dismantling the current system, I cannot get to my desired outcome. I'm going to caveat and say I would rather see them managed differently within the current system that we have, if that makes sense. So I would rather elk be considered a game animal, but with emphasis on public access. And that is not something that you see in Texas very much. Texas actually does a really good job of managing bighorn sheep. If you didn't know that, there's a lot of bighorn sheep in Texas, right? Do you remember the number?
I want to say it's like closer to 4,000 than 3,000 or something like
that. Which is probably like, what, top 6 in the country or something like that?
I don't know. It's a lot, I think. Yeah,
it's high. And the public has access to 1 to 2 tags per year of bighorn sheep. Albeit there are a lot more bighorn sheep than that on public land in Texas. So
it's similar to landowner tags for elk. There are landowners that get tags and can then sell the tags, except for that. While the top elk tag in the U.S. might sell for 20 or so, the top sheep tag might sell for 60
maybe or more than that. Yeah.
But like I think they're selling them for like 50 to 60. As far as I know, I'm not in that echelon of people, so I don't really know 100% what they're selling them for, but I think that is like, that's in there, 50 to 60. So anyway, I'm kind of in the same thought as you. There are some big tracts of public out where the elk live, but I don't think the elk inhabit those public tracts too much. And, I also don't know that the management of those tracks is done very well. I can't really speak to that, but I do feel like that there's not a ton of use going on out there in the hunting world for those. So
we can go buy a landowner tag in New Mexico right now if we decided to spend a lot of money on it and be there quicker than the large tracks that you're talking about in Texas. Mm. So just as a scope of the size of the state, right? Like it's just not one state. It is, but it's not. You'll get what I'm saying. All right. So that's the elk stuff. That was a good question.
That's a good question. That's a lot. If we didn't answer everything you wanted us to, you can hit us up with another question. We'll do one of these Q&As in about 3 months.
There's one good Anybody question who's, right there.
Yeah. So there's if you're on YouTube, there's an opportunity to post a question here. Mm-hmm. So
answer Timmy's reef right quick. Timmy said, any plans to hunt whitetail in the southeastern states? Love the content, by the way. Thanks, bro. Appreciate it. We're going to hunt Arkansas this year, which is not really southeastern, but almost. And then we may end up hunting Mississippi, Alabama. That just depends on kind of what January looks like.
Yeah. We are still stuck in October right now with planning.
That's right. Even September, actually. Yeah, actually. Yeah.
So, yeah, good question. Anything else on YouTube right now?
Just some what's up y'all.
Okay.
Thank you for the love.
New broadhead this year, Casey?
Yeah, actually. I'm going to shoot some of those Vector fixed blades some.
Okay.
I like them. I didn't like them at first, but I shot them, and they fly good, and it kind of makes sense. So I'll probably shoot them some. Not all the time, but a little bit.
I don't know for me. I don't think there will be a new rod head for me, but there could be.
I bet you if you go elk hunting, you'll shoot something a little bit less cutting.
Yeah, I would definitely. If I elk hunt, I would shoot a smaller mechanical or maybe that hybrid that mm-hmm. I've been shooting or potentially a fixed blade, but I just don't shoot fixed blades well.
Mm-hmm.
Enter Ragers. Thoughts on hunting a spot a bunch of times?
That sounds like it's from Dan Beeler. He might be mad that he used his whole name. Sorry. What do you think?
I love it.
You've killed a lot of deer that way, haven't you?
I've killed a lot of deer on the first time in, too. But I think in a specific situation, which I would say is your access is good, typically. If your access is pretty bulletproof, you're not walking through deer bedding, you're not spooking deer, you're not blowing your wind on them, and they're not maybe even crossing your trail as they go and do their thing over the next few days, then do it. So, like, if you can walk in 100 yards from a road on a private piece and hunt deer and be in the game, I think it's great to go in there and do that. I think you up your odds to kill a deer if you can hunt a good spot multiple times, big time.
Yeah, I'm with you. I also think that, like, in the rut, there's a potential for every day to be a new day, even if you spook it and blow it out.
Yep.
You know, so, like, in certain situations, it's fine. That's kind of what I would say.
Mm-hmm.
How do you pick the right tree to hang your saddle in? Does lean matter? We probably need to make these a little faster. Spend a lot of time on the first one and because we got fired up.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So, I think your question is a little bit different than what I'm going to answer right quick, but the right tree to hang a saddle in is the one you can kill a deer out of.
Boom.
So you got to make whatever work, for the most part.
I'll take a different direction from there if you're done on that.
Yep.
So to get to the technical part of your question, I agree with what Tyler says, and saddles allow you to do that, especially one that's comfortable. Like, we use those Cruiser XCs and like them a whole lot. That is what the lean thing is going to be a matter of. Ability, you can hang in about near any tree unless it is like, you know, a parallel limb to the ground or something stupid, right? Now, comfort, that's where you're going to run into, like, the situation of, well, I have to lean this way on my platform and wrap my tether around the tree a certain way to kind of make it work. But if you're trying to kill deer and not trying to post selfies in a saddle, that stuff doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah. People like different things, too. I know Chad from Cruiser likes a tree that hangs towards him or leans towards him so he can hang a little more. I prefer one that leans away. He feels like that pulls you to one side or the other of the tree, but I feel like it keeps all my gear out of my face.
So. It does that. I like a tree that's straight, personally. Straight up and down.
For sure.
That's my favorite.
I like straight. let's see. What are your thoughts on hunting out of pop-ups? I hear many say you can't kill big deer out of them.
Tyler, you have experience. Mention this?
I say that you can't kill big deer. No, I hear many say you can't kill big deer, period. So that's just what people are going to say, I think, a lot of times. I think you can definitely kill deer out of them. If you watch any Heartland Bowhunter, any outdoor TV, really, over the last several decades or whatever, you can kill deer out of pop-ups. I think it's a great move if you don't have an option out of a tree. I think it's a great move if you're a rifle hunter. There's definitely ways to kill out of them. So, the best way probably is to get it set up as soon as you can, get it brushed in, and, make sure your wind's good.
My hunting out of a pop-up is pretty limited, but I did some of it as a film guy this past February. And I will tell you this, you got to be conscious of what your shot windows are like.
Don't shoot the blind.
Shoot the blind if you don't watch out.
Yep.
What attractants do you guys like best?
I personally use Curve.
Abercrombie 8 is pretty nice.
Actually, I use some Hugo. You ever heard of that?
Yeah.
It's pretty good stuff. Clean smelling stuff.
Hugo or Boss? Which one?
Hugo, yeah. Is it Hugo?
Hugo Hold Boss. Up. Hugo Boss
I think
is
it's
the name
Hugo.
Of, yeah, it's the name of the brand.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I used to use in high school. Yeah. I had a little tiny bottle I used a little bit, but they bother my allergies. Because perfume is flower.
Dude,
it's like a flower.
I straight up just killed myself all through middle school and high school wearing some cologne.
Yeah. And then I realized, like, I didn't really have BO that bad anyway. So,
no. Yeah. Stupid.
Didn't smell nearly as bad as
when it comes to whitetail attractants, corn would definitely be my top attractant.
Corn is a good one. Yeah. Yep. I don't use any scent attractants, really. I just use the gas station scent on my bottom of my boots.
I don't even worry about that anymore.
Whataburger fries.
I don't worry about none of that stuff.
No. We would probably if we hunted more often. We've said that before, though. Or we hunted less often.
I thought you were being funny.
When scouting for cell camera, do you look for a minimum amount of service? Will one bar on the phone be usually enough for the cell camera? Dadgummit, I can't talk.
Actually, yes. It seems like, especially if you're not trying to do immediate uploads, if you have it set on we have those Moultrie bases, and I've got a couple out, like the one on my property right now, and it always uploads, and I can hardly make a phone call from where the thing is, and it's a Verizon camera, and I got a Verizon phone. So, if you got one bar, it's enough. It's kind of crazy, actually. Is that your experience, too?
Yeah. I mean,
with those cameras, at
least. Yeah, pretty much. I don't know. I don't rely on the cell camera a whole lot. I actually don't check it that often. Probably should check it more because, and frankly, we should check it right now because we are literally going to leave this podcast if pigs show up. but we don't typically, we just do that for pigs, you know, but I don't use it a whole lot. But yeah, I mean, I think overall, if you can get a little bit of service, you can get that thing to bounce out every once in a while. But sometimes it's just not going to happen. You may be able to have to try to get an antenna into the air too.
Yeah.
No pigs?
No pigs. Got a couple chupacabras.
Let's see. This is Timmy's Reef again on YouTube right here. Do you all prefer, he meant y'all, still prefer the Sitka tool belt as your primary whitetail back? I can't talk. I'm sorry, y'all.
That's a good pack.
It is.
We will be using a different pack this year.
Yeah.
And it's secret.
Secret pack. No mechanicals for elk. Oh, that's a statement. Okay. This guy's making all kinds of statements.
Yeah. That's our friend from the bow shop the other day.
Yeah, yeah. So who's the fastest element team member?
That's going to be you. I would say I'm second fastest, though.
Okay.
I don't know.
Hunter walks real fast.
Hunter walks fast. Eric might be. I feel like Eric's just shifty. I don't know.
Shifty 5.
It might take Eric a second to realize what's going on. So I could probably get the jump on him. That's where the start.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
It depends on the situation too. If we're chasing animals, I can catch a new gear.
Gotcha.
So, where's the best place in Arizona to cow hunt? I'm going to figure that out. I don't know for sure yet, goodness. But we're going to see.
we shall see, right?
Property in southeast Ohio, put a big ag field or a couple small strategic plots. I'm going to be speaking out of my league on this a little bit, so if you have a better thought.
Southeast Ohio, let me look at it. You
look at it. In general, it depends on what the ag field is, I would imagine, and what they're going to do with it. Like if it's a cornfield, and you have an efficient farmer and he's going to take all the corn out, then no, don't do that. But if you can pay him to leave 15 acres of corn, I don't see how you could do better than that. But I could be wrong, too. So
Southeast Ohio looks to be a lot of timber.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of timber.
Might be hard to put a big ag field in.
Yeah, I would probably, if it's in timber country, I think I would be more apt to put a bigger ag field in if I could, especially if you can make some cash rent off of it. Most importantly for deer, I think that a big draw food source could be good, especially if you're drawing from a lot of neighboring properties. So it does depend on what your neighboring properties have. If your neighboring properties are managed for deer, have some food plots and stuff like that, or there's ag around, then maybe the small plots are better. And maybe still just putting one small plot for a kill plot would be good too, if you could strategically place that on the way to the big destination.
You could always scale up too. First year, put you a tiny one in and see how it works for you.
Yep.
And just go from there.
We had a question on YouTube. You guys typically put in on several draws. How did you guys do?
I drew a cow tag in Arizona. That's how I did. And that's all we've drawn,
I think.
No
New Mexico stuff drawn for us. Colorado has not released it as of this moment that we know of. Mm-hmm. Everything else deer-wise is still out. So we've still got some draws to try to hit. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see what that entails.
Best public land unit in Texas for pigs? I would say the closest one to you, because most of them have hogs on them, and you're going to be better off learning the unit a little bit, walking around and figuring out where pigs are, as opposed to traveling to go hunt pigs. I just feel like that's a good way to spend 3 days and strike out.
Yep. Nailed it. KC, this is from our friend John Kelby on YouTube.
What's up, John?
KC, can you talk more about your late season strategy when you hunt out in the river bottoms that has endless timber? Better to stalk on a windy day or stay put?
Man, it's actually a really good question because we do have a pretty good strategy for this. Last year, we didn't use it as much because we were just in a different state at this point in time. But, like, there's always a trail that you can find. Almost you have to look for, like, rub lines. But it's not actually a rub line. It's a trail that they rub along whenever they walk up and down through there. And you can find that trail. And it's like, imagine you have a creek running left and right, okay? I'm not saying east and west because some of y'all get confused. Left and right, all right? So you have that. You have, in East Texas at least, and a lot of other states, it'll be a different type of timber. It's pretty much the same situation. You have these flats of ash trees, and then there'll be like a certain spot where the elevation starts to increase, and you'll get like a varied habitat of grassland, cedars, elms, hackberries, all this stuff. This trail will usually be like into the ash flat a little bit because they can walk easy and they can see very good down in there. And from there, the strategy is tough. You kind of just have to sit and wait on one to come by. If you're in the right spot, though, there can be quite a few deer that do use the area. And I kind of triangulate that to like food sources that are off the public land a lot of times as well. You hunted the same stuff. You have any more things to add to that?
That's pretty good. I think if you have one thing that we don't have that I wish we did sometimes is the time to really dive in and learn something close to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of you guys probably have that. Like, you have a place, whether it's public or private, that you hunt a lot, and that's where you're going to be most of the year. So I would say if you have that opportunity, if you can find a couple of bedding spots within that, that would be ideal to help you understand. Because there is a trail and there is a system, like Casey's talking about, where they're traveling through kind of, you know, this transition of that's river bottom where they can see pretty well. But you could be, if you're 300 yards, 200 yards to, you know, north or south, east or west, one direction, you might not see deer before dark because it is open enough that they can see well. So they're going to move in this stuff in the waning hours of light most of the time outside of the very dead rut because it's open enough that they feel comfortable, like they can disappear with, you know, running 100 yards. But before that, like, they are pretty vulnerable, I guess, in that stuff still too. So I guess my point is, if you can really locate the bedding, you can get closer to that stuff along that trail of that rub line and give yourself a better shot before dark or right after dark or whatever.
Yeah. We didn't really talk about wind directions. I think ideally the wind is blowing down off the high ground into the bottom. But down there, the wind gets real swirly, especially late season in Texas. A lot of times the wind just dies about 30 minutes before sunset. So you just kind of have to deal with that. And then John actually has a question that we didn't answer. Better to stalk on a windy day or stay put? I would say stay put on a daily basis, but don't be afraid to move your setup whenever you see deer Like, if you see them, you know, 60 yards from you using a trail headed north and south quite a bit, move over there and hunt that. Don't just assume that, oh, tomorrow they're going to come down my trail or whatever.
That stuff's hard to stalk in.
Yeah, it's crunchy.
Because they're just going to see you before you see them. And like you said, crunchy because of the ash leaves and the elm leaves that just fall everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Good question.
Mm-hmm.
So in the same vein here, best tip for spot and stalking during the day.
What's your best tip?
My best tip, if you're spot and stalking, so you're not just like still hunting, you've already seen the deer. my best tip is don't be lazy. It is so easy to be lazy and say, I think I can get away with that. Mm-hmm. When you could walk an extra 200 yards and for sure not get seen above the horizon or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Don't be lazy. Do what you got to do to stay. And just give yourself a shot. You know what I mean? if you're always taking chances, you're going to blow most of your stocks probably. Mm.
So I'm going to have to kind of do a compound tip here. Assuming that you are betting deer that you can see, what is on my arm? you bet them visually, and then you're going to go stalk them. All right. Mule deer do this a lot from what I've heard and watched and somewhat observed, but whitetail would do it too. As the sun gets higher in the day, sometimes they will get up and readjust their bedding. I would say one big tip I would have would be to wait till the sun is high in the day, and like high noon, you know, 11 to 2 p.m., like that's the best time to go to your stalk, because the sun's high, they can't see very good because it's bright, you know. Imagine you out there without your sunglasses on, like it's bright time. And then also, that's when the wind is the strongest in the day, usually. Eric actually knows a stat on this stuff because he went to college to do windmill stuff for a while, and he said like between noon and 4, on average, across the U.S. is the strongest winds of the day. So strong winds means good stalking conditions. That's straight up what it means. So that's thought. What I would definitely say to
John
do.
Kelby gave us a good tip, too. He said use a hook style release, and they put a laughy face.
That's right, dude.
That's how I feel,
yeah,
man.
That's true.
I've moved to the hook style, I think. So good thought. Fly fishing tips for a newbie, KC.
Wow. Go fish for bluegill.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and don't spend too much. Make sure you like it first, and you're going to stick with it, I think. But don't buy the Shakespeare.
No,
like,
don't buy Shakespeare.
You can buy like a White River at Bass Pro.
Spend about up to $200 on your first
rig. Yeah, it's a good call. And buy a combo. Get them to make sure that, you know, there's string on it like you're supposed to have it, and kind of help you out. And it's not – don't overcomplicate it. Also, this is my – as a beginning fly fisherman, this is where I learned a lot of stuff. The Orvis Fly Fishing Guide, I think that's what it's called.
Yep.
It's a book. You can probably get it all online or whatever now. I don't know. But I had the book, and it shows the life cycle of the mayfly. It shows you kind of general tips for certain types of water, how to read water, all this stuff. Really cool. Really cool, man. Dive into that stuff. It's fun. It's so much fun. I think this might come from your buddy up north of us here, not too far. Is Joe Biden really president?
No. No, he's not. And whatever sense you want to put that, he's not.
Yeah, okay. Favorite call? Javelina?
Yeah, for sure. I was trying to go sarcastic with that, too. It's like, I don't get a lot of good phone calls anymore. When Garrett calls me, it's usually a good call.
Yeah, I like it. Because he's usually just not telling you any truths.
Yeah. If we're going whitetail, which I imagine this is, because we do mostly whitetail stuff, I don't even know the brand. I think it might be a Primos call, but it's wooden and has a reed inside, and I like that call a lot. We use that a lot.
Yep.
Yeah, for grunts. But yeah, I don't know. What's your favorite duck call?
My favorite duck call. I was actually thinking about that. I used I think it's a Rich and Tone Quackhead for a long time. It was like a $25 call, and I could rip that sucker. It sounded so good to me. I love it. I still have it, and I use it. That's my main call. I've never really had a real expensive call, but I had some decent echoes at one point. What was that guy's name that made those? Doug. Oh, I can't remember. Flutie. It wasn't Doug. Anyway, came to the lodge and gave us some echoes or
that's
whatever.
That's cool.
Yeah. So,
your favorite mechanical, Tyler?
So thus far, I've shot a lot of deer with a NAP Spitfire. I shot the Max, which was, I think it's called the Max with two X's, and it has a cut on contact head. I've killed a bunch of deer with that. I think I shot Nameless with that. And then I switched over this year to a Grim Reaper. After shooting a fixed blade, two blade for a couple of years and paper cutting the mess out of some deer. and now I'm shooting a mechanical Grim Reaper that's real big right now.
Big old three blade.
Called a Whitetail Special.
I think we're both fans of three blades.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a good thing. Favorite fix? Somebody asked the same question twice.
I like the minium points.
I don't really know what my favorite fix is. I think they're all okay. And they all have a purpose. Those vectors are cool, but they're kind of new. I haven't shot many things with them yet. I mean, the go-to answer here for a lot of guys is Iron Will. I didn't have a great experience with it. I feel like it's an anomaly, but who knows?
What about the Exodus? You like them?
Those are pretty good. They're three blades.
That's what you shot the meat buck with, right?
Yeah.
Stoned him.
Stoned him down right there. That's the dude like the Fitzgerald's high shoulder shot or something. Just dropped him in place. They fly really good.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Just pick one and shoot it a lot.
How important is FOC for whitetails?
Important enough to hit a certain range, but not important enough to sweat like 0.5%. I mean, I think if you're...
It's more important for arrow flight than anything, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I really? Would say. And... you could. There's arguments for penetration.
Yeah.
There's arguments for tuning and all this stuff. But, I mean, if you're at least at 13, I think you're pretty good shape. You can kill them with two. But it's hard to actually get the two.
I mean, you can. People have been killing them. With,
In 20 years, they're liable to talk about BOC, back of center, because they want a bunch of weight behind it to push it through.
Yeah.
Like, it's just stuff.
And something new to talk about.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, this is from your buddy Adam Keith. One type of broadhead the rest of your life.
He loves this question.
It's because he loves my answer on it, I think.
What's your answer?
It's a mechanical three-blade. Yeah, that's it. He loves...
Well, if it is... Okay, one type of broadhead. So you can replenish as many times as you want to.
Yeah, and I think it doesn't necessarily mean the biggest cut all of... I'm just saying a three-blade mechanical.
I would pick a smaller three-blade mechanical if I had to choose one for the rest of my life.
For elk and all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. ZMR or HMR for whitetail? Ooh, we gonna get different answers.
The ZMRs you shot last year.
That's what you want?
Because weren't you at like 525?
523 total.
I think that's what. So, a little reveal here, but Vector is changing their component system up a little bit. They're actually improving their components. They're actually pretty sick, and they're made in-house now. So, it's going to change the weights of arrows a little bit, and the HMR is going to be a whole lot easier to land in the 520 to 550 range. So that's probably what I'm going to stick with. The ZMR is going to end up being in the 400s a lot whenever you input your information in the algorithm, which seems – it's pretty good, man. However, like, I'm not going to switch arrows mid-season, so I probably just want the thing I can shoot all year long.
There's a lot of guys that will be fine shooting the ZMR because it's as heavy or heavier than what they've been shooting that are listening right now. So – with that said, I think if you don't know what you shoot, then a ZMR is probably just fine.
Mm-hmm.
If you're actually starting to look into this and you know what you shoot, then you can make a decision from there. I shot a deer in Nebraska last year with a hammer, and it shot straight through him, up and down with a giant broadhead, like through the sternum and everything. Had a bent blade, and so I was shooting like 575, I think, at that point. So I went down 50 grains, shot a ZMR, and killed everything else with like broadside shots. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's the thoughts. You can kill a whitetail with both of them for sure.
And honestly, if you're not traveling the country hunting, ZMR might be the easy answer.
Yeah.
Because it's going to make for flatter trajectories, and overall, like, you just don't need to be shooting 550 grains for a Texas whitetail. It's just not the truth, or Southern whitetail in general. So, and maybe, I mean, Isaac's take on this is like, hey, don't plan for plan B, just make a good plan A. Like, make a good shot on an animal. Don't hit him in the shoulder. And I kind of am with him. I kind of understand.
Yeah, I remember Hunter telling me that last year too, and I thought, that's a good point, man.
Speaking of Isaac, he asked this question. Ever going to try a Texas heart shot on a pig? The answer is possibly yes, but I don't want to do it to be gruesome. I want to do it for actual hunting scientific purposes. So, okay,
explain real quick.
Well, I feel as if it's all soft tissue if you hit the right spot. So I want to see what the penetration is going to be like. It's the same thing as a frontal, except it's a rear shot.
Yeah.
And people would call you unethical for taking the rear shot, but if you pull off a frontal on something, people are like, oh, man, you're a killer, you know, so...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Have you tried any raw cuts of meat?
We did the other day at Dai Dewey.
Mm-hmm.
It was a round steak from a Nilgai. And it was one of the best things I've ever eaten in my life.
Real tasty.
Yeah.
That said, this is kind of interesting. I don't think I've told too many people this. I don't love the smell of venison, raw venison, because it reminds me of gutting a deer.
Makes me hungry. We're so different on that.
I know. And so I think I like that. I like to cook the venison. You know what I mean? So I don't think I will ever eat venison tartare from a white-tailed deer, but possibly from an elk.
I've eaten a lot of raw meat that is marinated to turn into jerky and just not let it get to the dehydrator yet. I've eaten a lot of that.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
I like raw fish a lot.
Yeah, me too.
For cell cam, do I need a certain level of service? We already got through that one. Why don't y'all run lighted Knox?
Haven't messed with the hassle of it yet. We've talked a lot about it for a couple years. We might do it this year.
Yeah, it's cool. I want to have a decent FOC, which we've talked about, which I don't think will affect too much, but potentially a little bit. And then also just like, they're another expense, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, preferred spine.
I mean, it's just going to depend on your bow, but for the most part, 300s are usually what a 28-inch, 70-pound draw guy usually runs, depending on the point weight and stuff like that. So definitely don't, like, take our advice on that. Like, either go put your thing in the Vector algorithm and see what it says, or go to your bow shop and let them tell you what to use. If you're local, go to OnTarget. They're the best.
Yeah. You want a truck?
Hypothetically.
Let's see, best pack to carry, or packs to carry in platform, sticks, and camera.
I don't know if anybody's made the best one yet.
No, you can see some of the stuff on our channel of stuff we've used in the past for that. I believe Eric used a pack called the Tool Bucket last year, and it worked fine. I don't know. I think as long as you have a sizable pack, like a mid-size to large whitetail pack, you can carry all that stuff usually. Now, one thing I would say is having some straps on the pack are important, I think, because you're going to want to carry extra clothes for one, and then your sticks and platform need to be able to strap on probably too. The camera needs to be able to go inside. We're really hard on our camera equipment. Of course, we use them for a specific purpose, whereas somebody else is, you know, potentially trying to reserve the value of that camera a little more than we are, maybe just because they spend a lot of money on it and, you know, it matters. But to us, we're just really hard on them, and we try to take care of them, but in the end, we still got to shove that thing in a pack like 60 times a year or more probably and haul it in a mile with stuff all over the pack, you know. So really just a long way of saying medium to large size whitetail pack with straps on it would be the best way to go, probably.
Yep. Why hunt Texas public ground? Non-sarcastically.
Did you ask this?
No, I didn't. The reason you would hunt Texas public ground is because you don't have enough time or money to travel far, and you need to hunt locally.
And you don't have private access.
Yeah, you don't have private access.
Or you like an extreme challenge.
It's hard. It really is hard. I mean, straight up, Tyler and I have killed a few bucks on Texas public land.
Yep.
And I still like it. I'll probably step foot on some Texas public land this year, but I'm not going to focus on it.
Hey, dude, I can promise you if there was more than like 3.5 months of deer hunting, I would hunt more on Texas public. But it just, especially when you start looking at November being the month, it's like, oh, there's so many places that I would probably rather be, you know, for many reasons. So here you go. Thoughts on frontal shots.
All I'm going to say is wait till y'all see this Oklahoma footage.
Dadgummit, dude.
Yeah.
Hammer or ZMR?
Hammer.
That's a hammer?
Mm-hmm.
Hammer time, dude.
Hammer.
What about an Illinois guy trying to tell if a deer in Texas is 13 inches wide or not?
He better just hope it's 15 because he kind of fuzzy-eyed.
That's true, man. He's got to look real big.
Ear tips are the supposed thing. I would say for this individual, look for an older deer because there's a good chance that it's going to be old enough. And then also with this guy, if he is in the situation where he's hunting a Texas deer, listen to your cameraman because he's going to tell you if it's big enough or not.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Well, we'll say for everyone listening, a mature buck is going to have wider ears than 13 inches. But 13 inches is kind of like that mark of like a 2 or 3 year old. Ear tip to ear tip is around that.
Yeah. That's probably pretty close. I don't know. I feel like even mature bucks around here might have
13 inch ears. It's hard to say.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I don't know what to tell you other than you can just be real sure or you can just take your chances.
I passed a champion of a Texas public land buck 2 years ago because of this.
I can promise you, if you ask a game warden, send a picture to him, he's going to say, I wouldn't shoot it every time.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's close, he ain't going to be the one telling you to shoot it. I promise you. So don't send a picture to a game warden and ask him if it's 13 inches wide. Across the U.S., where have you seen the best rut activity? Texas. South Texas.
Actually didn't, like all my years doing that, I didn't see a ton of like chasing wild stuff.
I mean,
Iowa probably.
Yeah, dadgummit. That's right.
Yeah.
Iowa, for sure. Now, if you're talking late October scrape rut activity, Illinois was pretty good that one day.
Mm-hmm.
That one day I hunted. but yeah, Iowa. I mean, if you haven't seen it yet, there's a video of me shooting a deer in 2019 on public ground, and this deer just falls this doe locked in across the road and 80 yards later is in my lap, just sounds like a dirt bike. He's grunting so long and loud. It's cool, man. So yeah, I would say that's probably the place. We actually talked about Iowa a bunch today already.
Is Rut Daniels his real name? I don't really know.
I don't either. Probably not. It's kind of like, who was I thinking of the other day?
Fish Fishburne.
Yeah. Fish Fishburne, that's not his real name.
Surely not.
Stoney LaRue, that's not his real name.
No.
And I know that. Who else?
Casey Smith,
yep, Casey.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of them.
When's the hog rut?
Year-round. Year-round, the hogs are rutting. It just depends on the social dynamic of a particular herd, really. If you want to get into... And I don't know if this is a serious question or not, because it could be one of those, hey, I want to crack on y'all a little bit. But I'm going to answer it serious. If you want to get into a hog rut situation, then I would hunt a group of pigs that has a few boars in the sounder, because then that's when things get interesting.
It's fun to watch. When that happens.
Yep. What about you? Same thing?
Yeah. Just anecdotally, sows have a litter every 3 months, or... Sows have the potential to have a litter every 3 months, 3 weeks, 3 days. That is the gestational period, and then they will cycle back in within that month again. I don't think they even have to be weaned to cycle back in. So, they reproduce very quickly. Hanging hunts on Texas pub or tree. Our trees generally aren't tall and have a lot of low branches.
Is this mesquite country?
Maybe.
I don't know. I mean... Our trees, we have some we have lots of low trees, obviously. We have some tall trees. We have a lot of, like, I've hung 8 foot up a lot in, like, a hackberry or something like that. So, I don't know if that fits your description of your property here that you're talking about, but definitely suggest hunting on Texas pub if you can get into a tree. I like the ability to see a little bit further, which sometimes... Most of the time is from a tree, but not always. So sometimes you can see a little bit further from the ground, depending on the habitat. I like to be able to see a little bit further, and I like also the ability to draw my bow and be just somewhat slightly out of the general vision of a deer, which is above him usually, as opposed to being on the ground where his lateral pupil of his eye is designed to see things.
Yep.
So... That's my thought. I guess I hope that answers your question. It's kind of a vague question
there. What was the question?
Hanging hunts on Texas pub?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say do it.
Yeah. This is for you for sure. This is from our buddy, Mr. Presswood. Tips for a first-time rifle elk hunter planning a backpack camp or planning two backpack camp 2 to 3 days at a time.
Dude, I've been texting him about this a little bit. You know way more than I do about this, so stop asking me. No, I mean, if you wanted my advice, that's the way to do it. Don't spend too much time in one area if you're not seeing stuff. I would say, what else? If you're seeing people, then maybe don't stay back there for 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
Maybe get out. Take plenty of warm clothes. Have an ability to melt ice. If you're going a rifle, you know, it might be cold. I don't know. Lower elevations are always easier to deal with. I don't know. That's about what I got.
That's better than I got. New to Texas. When is the rut? Nude to Texas.
Is that what it says?
No, nude? It says nude to Texas.
Depends on where you're at. Pretty much you can draw a line that's probably like I-10-ish. And below I-10, things get real weird. Above I-10, it's going to be like mid-November-ish. We always say we have somewhat of a trickle rut. I think it's probably better to explain it as like, in Iowa, there's a bell curve that peaks on November 7th/8th, and it valleys out on November 1st and November 15th or something like that, right? So, however, in Texas, you're going to have peak breeding that's like November 20th for a lot of the state, maybe November 15th, but you will see rut activity on wider shoulders of said bell curve.
Mm-hmm. Best rut activity we've seen in East Texas has been on trail cams, has been on the 14th overall. That's probably the best day we've seen.
That can also range from property to property, too. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And then also,
but I mean, like, that depends on a specific doe coming into heat or whatever most of the time. But overall, we've had lots of trail cameras in lots of different areas of East Texas, and November 14th has been the hot day overall.
Mm-hmm.
There's great days all throughout November.
Yeah. And then you go like far southeast Texas, like south of Houston, there's some weird September dates that you can't even hunt. You go extreme south Texas, it's late December. I've never hunted that stuff. That's what I hear, right? Golden Triangle stuff's kind of late December.
It's mid-December, I believe.
Mid-December.
Yep.
So, I don't know. It depends on your region for sure.
Yep. Advice for people who overthink the rut.
Just hunt it, man.
Sometimes these questions have an angle to them that I don't understand. That guy's like got a friend that overthinks the rut.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hey, man, listen to this podcast.
I don't know for sure what what he's trying to say or what he wants me to say. I would try to answer it for him to help him out with his buddy's argument. But, I don't know. I mean, the rut is simply put, all things can go, right? Anything can happen. So, and deer are moving a lot. So get where you can shoot them from where they're going to be moving. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Don't hunt up in a big thicket. Hunt a place where deer are going to be moving around because deer move around the rut. John brings up a good point here. It says TPDBD puts out research info on the rut, and also you can look at the data on Onyx, and they do have a whitetail rut map that's kind of pretty neat to look at. So check that out.
Among other layers that are in there.
We're looking at the crop layer today a lot.
Dude, I like so the crop layer, one thing I really like about the crop layer right now is when you scroll over a crop, now it just pops up and tells you what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to click on it and scroll down and find what that crop is, because some of the colors, you know, if you haven't seen them before, you know, maybe some, you know, it may be something that you want to be hunting, but it's just so much more intuitive now when you just scroll over it and it tells you exactly what it is.
Advice for a Midwestern kid who dreams about elk hunting but has never been out west.
Go fishing.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Go fishing, learn how to live in the mountains for a few days when the weather's not too intense, you know, like the most intense weather you'll get out west in the summertime is going to be rainstorms that pop up probably and lightning. So prepare yourself for that. But outside of that, like typically it's not going to snow in July anywhere too much.
Unless you're way up high.
It happens.
Yeah.
But I mean, go out, I'd say go you know, go to New Mexico, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, wherever, depending on where you want to go hunting. If it's in grizzly country, then you might get you some grizzly experience by going out there and, you know, living in grizzly country and learning a few things. But I honestly, if you've never been out west, I wouldn't be hanging out in grizzly country too much at first. I would learn how to manage your food. I would learn, you know, what it's like to get to a certain elevation and not get altitude sickness, or get it and, you know, get down from there. You know, and then maybe just read some books on people who do that kind of thing. Listen to some podcasts. I had a, remember that book I had is like Rocky Mountain fishing, fly fishing the Rocky Mountains or something. It was like, about a guy who would do like 100-mile treks or whatever. Mm-hmm. He would do like road to road through a mountain range and just go off grid or off trail and fish, you know, random, you know, ponds or whatever. And I mean, that guy has a lot of good advice about carrying food and stuff like that.
So, you know what I hate, I think, is still water fishing in the mountains.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way.
It's pretty frustrating.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's a lot more, there's so much to it that I don't like, actually.
There's like a deal I haven't experienced yet of like the super high mountain lakes that's awesome. But in general, it's like you got to be, a lot of times you got to use tiny, tiny flies and a really good presentation.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
Yeah. I want to throw a pillow up into the water and let it fall down into a pool and get smashed.
Nothing like throwing a size 8 floating thing and letting it get smashed in a creek.
Yeah, for sure.
So tips on first time elk hunter planning to, no, sorry, that's not the one. Advice for a Midwestern kid who dreams about elk hunting but has never been out west. That's what we're answering right now. Mm-hmm. You gave those answers. I had a different take. I would say start applying for points right now and burn some points pretty soon if you got a little money. If not, then work a little bit and get some money to apply for points and go do some hunting in some better units. There's like this conundrum of OTC, right? So like there's an opportunity, but it's usually, how do I say, it's not the best often in my experience. But you can spend a lifetime learning a unit and figure out how to kill elk every year in this unit. Or you can go on some really good elk hunts, or I shouldn't say really good, but it's like some quality elk hunts, and learn elk really good and then feel really good about going a lot of places and hunting elk and doing well. So I would like apply for points in a lot of states, burn points at 2 or 3 points when you get the opportunity to go hunt like some decent units that, you know, you can see some elk in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my take on it.
Should I be up high on the ridgetops or down by the river bottoms? All day sits in hill country.
This is a question for you for sure.
Dadgummit.
We don't hunt that stuff that often. And when I'm going to let Tyler maybe give a more extensive answer. I am a guess and check kind of guy when it comes to that stuff, because it kind of might depend on what the buck in the area is doing.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, I kind of like ridge tops ish, but at the same time, I like the bottoms. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Wherever the hot sign is, it's a hard thing.
Yeah, it is. It is hard. I think it's really just where do you want to kill a deer? Because they're going to use ridge tops. I think especially in the mornings, you're going to see that. So, and here's the deal. You're saying all day sits in hill country. I do not like all day sits.
See, I don't mind all day sits as much.
I did one last year. Eric and I did.
Y'all had fun on that, didn't
you? He's over there naked at the bar.
Was it hot outside?
And so, yeah, the Illinois guy is getting a little warm. But, yeah, we did an all-day sit, and it's like we saw a great deer, made a great video from that day, almost killed a nice young buck, but a real nice deer. We had him at 70 yards, and he would have probably come into range if there wasn't does there messing things up. And that deer, we saw him when you expect to see deer in the evening. And so, I think we saw a buck that morning too, when you expect to see bucks in the morning. We didn't see nothing in the midday. And so I'll stay out in the field all day, but I want to be moving in the evening. I want to have a good plan for why I should kill a deer here in the morning, and then I want to have an even better plan for why I should kill a deer there in the evening. And I think sometimes you can overthink that, for sure, but I think overall, like, most of the year, I feel like probably deer are not at least the ones I've hunted, aren't so predictable that they're going to do the exact same thing they did that morning, that evening.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like hunting in the same spot, if I didn't see many deer that evening, or that morning, hunting the same spot that evening doesn't sound good to me. So I guess what I would say is I'd probably hunt like ridge tops in the mornings if it was me, and try to catch a buck cruising in the mornings on tops of the ridge, trying to find does or whatever. And then I might get into the river bottoms in the evening when, like around dark, the thermals will start sinking back into the river bottom. And so you can sit on the edge of a river or a creek and have your thermal suck back into it, and a deer cruise down that river bottom heading out to ag or something like that in the evening. But it really, man, it just depends on what I'm hunting, and I just try to make the best decisions by looking at the map that I can based off the wind and a couple other attributes that are going on or whatever they are, variables. So
sounds good.
Is that all?
That's all. Yeah, I feel like there's a lot more the other day, but
yeah, that's about all right.
That's a lot.
What are you most excited about that's going to happen or that you hope happens from September to January? Mr. Yanni.
Man, I just got hit with it.
Oh, Giannis.
September to January? It's going to be a pretty long, extensive time period of high, so it's pretty hard to say. Pretty excited about our December Texas hunt, to tell you the truth. Been talking about that one for many years.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go do it finally. Yeah, that's what I'll say.
If you're asking, I'm looking forward to potentially a mule deer hunt.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, too.
Particular, yeah. If I draw it, so got to draw it first.
Make you a TIE fighter, that's hilarious, Aaron Davis. Yes.
So that, I think, is going to wrap it up for us. We appreciate you guys listening and submitting questions. If you have more questions, you can do that through any of our avenues, which are the email at the website or any of our DMs for any of our social. So, or you can do it on any random YouTube video if you want to make note of a question that you have and that we should put that in a podcast. So
that's right. If you haven't, please go check out some of the turkey stuff that we put out. Mm-hmm. You guys don't like turkey hunting, I don't think. So we worked pretty hard and kind of had some fun doing that stuff. There's a couple turkey hunting videos on the page. John did ask what I was playing with. This is a bracket that goes onto a solar charger for a deer feeder that we're going to put out for make a hog feeder, because shooting pigs is fun, and we're going to probably try to go do that soon. So yeah, that's what we're going to try to do today is get that hog feeder out. We thought we might shoot some pigs, but
are there any pigs?
No, just chupacabras. Crows everywhere.
Yeah.
If y'all have any good crow recipes, tell Spencer.
Yeah, there are some pigs to be shot. We actually recently just almost got all the pigs, and then we didn't get any. So it was a bad deal. We probably should tell that story. Should we tell it right now or tell it later?
Right now.
Okay, so I don't know if I said this on the podcast or not yet, but we went down to try to shoot some pigs the other day. We had this big pig coming in. We thought it was a sow because it's so fat. And so we get down there. We're sitting for like 30 minutes. The mosquitoes are just trying to carry us off. And all of a sudden, Casey's like, there they come. And I look down. These pigs are like 60 yards away coming.
The whole time, but let me give a little backstory here.
Yeah.
The whole time we're second-guessing ourselves and saying why this isn't going to work and we're going to win the pigs and all. And then when they finally show up, it's like, oh, I can't believe it.
Yeah. So they start coming, and like the third pig is the big one. And when it kind of pops out, we can see it a little bit. Me and Casey at the same time are like, it's a boar. We couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. And it is the fattest boar you've ever seen. I don't think I've ever seen a bigger boar. And they come out and they go to where our corn has been, which isn't there anymore. And they just get in this mud pile, and we can't see them because they're like low and there's a bunch of grass in the way. We're on the ground, and they come back up. And when that boar comes out and you can see his full body, we were like, oh my goodness, the thing is huge. So anyway, Yeah, there he is. He's got a white dot in his shoulder, Casey. It's weird. So he's walking, and I thought he's going to stop and at least sniff the ground where the corn had been, you know, whatever. Nope, just walks, and I think he's pushing this other little boar in front of him, kind of out of the group or whatever. Well, he gets, like, pretty close, and I'm like, oh, it's 28, 30 yards. I can shoot this thing on the walk, right? So I put it out in front of him a little bit, and I shoot, and that white dot that you just saw, on if you're watching on YouTube, is where I hit him, in the shoulder. And it just, like, doesn't get a whole lot of penetration, but we feel pretty good about it. Like, we're like, oh, yeah, that's in there. Like, it probably got along. So we start tracking him. And actually, KC actually gets a shot, and he shoots at a frontal, like, 30-yard pig. That's a decent-sized pig.
Dude, here's the deal, guys. When my bow goes off nowadays, and I'm not trying to be overly confident, but, like, when I pull the trigger, I expect it to die. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just where I'm at as a hunter nowadays. Like, a bow has become a part of, like, what I do. It's almost like shooting a gun now. Like, I just think the arrow's going to go where it's supposed to. So this was a weird thing.
Yeah.
I shoot the pig 30 yards. My pin is set for 30 yards. I'm ready to rock and roll. And it looks like it goes low, but it sounds really good.
I was like, ooh, low. And you're like, really? Sound like it hit. And I was like, it did. Sound like it hit, but I'm pretty sure I just saw it go low. But I always question myself because I don't always see where, like, people all the time would be watching, like, outdoor TV, and somebody will shoot a deer, like, close range and gets it, you know, goes through them real quick. I'm like, ooh, that looked bad. And somebody will be like, I thought it was good. And it ends up being good. I don't know why I don't process that very good. But
ends up, this boar runs out and kind of, like, almost staggers around. We're like, oh, he's going to go down. And he runs off. What's going on? And then we get up to go try to track Tyler's pig. In mine, and then find my arrow, and I'd shot, like, that clay, sticky mud, and it made a thunk sound just like you were to hit a pig. So I missed the pig low completely.
Yep, and we figured that out quick. So we went to where I'd seen this hog that I shot cross a little opening, and we found blood pretty quick, and it looked pretty good. And so we follow it for, like, 100 yards or more, probably, and you know, we get into some thick stuff, and all of a sudden we kind of hear something weird. In case he's like, pigs, you know, or whatever. So we kind of dip out to the side where we can see a little bit better, and there's a boar, big black boar, and I'm like, man, I don't know if that pig's as big as the one I shot. I don't think it's the same one. We thought it might be, though, because it was right in the same direction as the blood was leaving.
And the mud was on the – oh, no. You've already got that far. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, we like get out to the side, and I'm going to shoot this pig. I think it might be the one. He beds back down. He was like, he got up, and whenever they all got nervous, and then he bedded back down, I guess. Probably didn't want to leave those sows. But so I get another shot, and I hit it. Like, it looks like the pig's quartered away. And so I, like, should have just straight up gone through, like, maybe the back part of his shoulder. Like, it was perfect, it felt like. Anyway, I'm like, smoke, you know, got him. I don't normally say stuff like that. I'm usually like, I don't know, it felt pretty good, you know, whatever. Well, I felt real good about it. So we get over there, we start tracking blood for this pig because, when we dip back into the woods right there after I shot, all of them took off, and they had to have been like 15 or 20 yards from us, and we couldn't,
like,
see them.
We walked a circle around them almost.
Yeah. So they take off, they jump a creek or run through a creek basically. And Casey's like, they went through the creek. I was like, okay, well, let's track this one because I know I shot this one good. And we start tracking, and we get like 200 yards probably or more.
Liver blood is what it is.
Yeah, it's dark blood. And I'm like, what is going on? This thing, it looked like it was stumbling. When it ran off, it went to like 50 yards and started like stumbling around. And we were like, oh, that thing's going to be dead right there inside the woods, right? We go over there, is not. So we track it through there, and we get like 150 more yards from there. And we're just like, almost can't find blood anymore. I'm like, this is stupid. What is going on? Also, my arrow had like a bunch of fat or gristle on it. And so we were a little bit weird about that. And I was thinking, I felt so good about the shot. I was just like, I blew it off and was like, well, the gristle or the fat just, you know, wiped all the blood off the arrow. Well, I don't know if it got a whole bunch of blood on it because it was a liver shot, I guess. And it's just weird because it was the animals laying down, and I guess that made things weird. Also, solid black pig later in the evening, it's hard to get your perspective on that.
It's hard to say that is much more than a big black sausage.
Yeah.
You know, like, they are hard to pick out a spot to shoot.
That's right. So anyway, we kind of lose blood.
And in that, we hear pigs, and I'm up, right? Because we're kind of like going back and forth. So I kind of start stalking around, and Tyler's kind of over my shoulder, and he said, there it is. Then there's two more, or something like that. And like, we don't really see what's going on for sure, but I can see a big pig kind of behind the briars. And then like one runs out, and then another one runs out like at 50, right? You'd ranged it, I think. Mm-hmm. And I draw back thinking like this is the only shot I have. Like the pigs have smelled us or they're gone. And shoot, got my pin set at 50, okay? And shoot low, like real low, like below the pig's feet low. And I'm thinking, what on earth is happening? Because this is not something that I'm used to or not something I like by any means. And then things go haywire. Pigs go everywhere. There's probably 15 pigs running different directions. I start running up to try to catch up to the pig. Tyler runs around like trying to like come around the other corner. He sees a big boar start running towards me. Me and this big boar meet head on at like 5 yards, and we both like lock it up hardcore. And this boar turns a flip trying to get out of there. And I'm like trying to knock an arrow to get a shot off. He runs out. I think he leaves, but two more boars at like 35 yards or something stop and like kind of threw some brush. And so I like just draw back and shoot, and I hit one of those in the shoulder, and it runs off. And
stole
we don't find
a lot of money from you.
Yeah, stole an expensive broadhead. So we don't find any pigs.
So we shot 5 arrows and have not found a pig. And then that picture that you just saw, if you're watching on YouTube, that first pig, the big one I shot, shows back up with a big old white spot on him. And it's like, dadgummit. So one of those things where, like, we probably wouldn't be able to put much of that on YouTube because you're going to get this rage from Brazil, you know? But we wanted to tell our podcast audience, you know, captured audience or whatever they say.
That's right.
Guys that understand a little bit better, and we can tell the story a little bit better that way, too, because we can use our words as opposed to video only. And anyway, it was a frustrating night, to be honest. Like, we were super down, or I was especially super down and frustrated about the fact that we went in there. We've been spending some money on corn and trying to, you know, have some fun this summer. And we go, you know, and mess the whole area up on probably 2 different sounders, it looked like. And it just didn't feel good, you know. Shot a bunch of arrows, couldn't find some of the pigs, you know. And so probably a decent chance we killed 1 or 2 and weren't able to find them. And that's just what happened. And we were way off from the truck. So, and it was dark right after you shot that pig. You know, we didn't have much time after you shot that pig, that last one. Mm-hmm. And so it just, it was just one of those things. We just weren't prepared either, like we would have been if we'd had deer, you know, been hunting deer, we'd have had a flashlight. And you just, everything's so more systematic with deer sometimes, you know,
yeah,
for the most part.
Pigs is chaotic for sure.
It is.
But it's such a great time to learn, man. And that's what that night did. It taught me a bunch about like preparation and also not getting frustrated and flustered in the moment and like all that stuff that you were just talking about how like you need to have some certain things, you need to be prepared for this, you check your equipment. The reason I was hitting low on those pigs is because I had recently sighted in my bow, and I went to a limb-driven rest. It's a ripcord limb-driven rest, and I kind of like it. It's something kind of new for me, but I had sighted in without my quiver on. Well, I have a new tight spot, too, and it's really cool. I love it. It's way better than my old quiver. But you have the option of running that quiver in as far as you want to. Well, if you run in too far, it actually comes into contact with your wrist. That's a bad thing. And so that's why I was hitting low every time. I figured that out. Like, the next morning, I had to go shoot, right? So I got out, put my pin on 20, and shot below my target. And I was like, what on earth is going on? And I started looking at my bow. Because it can't be me, right? You know, but and sure enough, it actually wasn't this time, which was
nice. It's kind of like the guy when you see the outfielder like miss the ball and then he looks at his glove.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, there's a hole in my glove.
What's going on here? Yeah, exactly.
But it actually was your bow at that time. So
it was. So I got that fixed and we're ready to rock and roll.
Yeah,
shooting darts now.
Yeah. So anyway, there will probably be some footage come from that at some point, because we're going to try to kill another pig here soon. So we may throw some of that in there so you get to see it. You know, it's pretty cool footage. Eric took some cool footage of that first sounder that came in and me shooting that big one in slow motion so you can see how big he actually was. But anyway, we'll let you know when that comes out. We got some just random fishing and turkey and pig stuff coming out this summer, and we're really excited to kind of get through this and get to the fall already. We've been talking a bunch about it today. So anyway, we appreciate you guys listening. We appreciate all the questions that were submitted for this podcast. Keep submitting them. We're going to do a Q&A at least every like quarter. We're going to try to do that. And remember, this is your elephant.
Living it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.
Market House has the cleanest, leanest, juiciest meat and seafood shipped to your home overnight. Expect the service of a local butcher and the convenience of a large supplier. Unlike many online butchers, you can grab just one meal's worth or lock in for a subscription box. Choose from grass-fed and grass-finished beef, American Wagyu, free-range poultry, grass-fed lamb, wild-caught king crab, seafood, and more.
For 15% off your first order, use code COUNTRY at checkout. Just visit markethouse.com.
That's MarketHouse.com. And use the code COUNTRY.